It is December 16th, 2018. This is episode 96 of Fancy Ramen. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And today, hot off of the flu or strep throat or something, I'm alive. Episodes are up. But I won't necessarily be talking too much this episode just to make sure I don't get even sicker. What have you guys been up to?
Yeah, I have been playing just all of the Smash. It's literally been my week. It's been go to work, in between calls, playing Smash, on my lunch breaks, playing Smash. I'm now a part of one Smash community here in Omaha. So it's just been a lot of Smash this week. Oh,
nice.
I guess. Oh, I saw Spider-Man yesterday. That was nice.
Into the Spider-Verse?
Yes, and by far the best Spider-Man. And it just like the recent Insomniac series of Spider-Man, they did also make canon a lot of the old Spider-Man movies.
Which ones? We're talking Radioactive Spider-Man, not Amazing Spider-Man, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so the I almost said Andrew Garfunkel. But no, those were already
Andrew
canon.
Garfield.
But, yeah, Garfield? Was that the one with the emo Spider-Man dance?
No, that's Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, Tobey Maguire is also canon now.
That's good. I'm glad they immortalized that.
Wait, how was Andrew Garfield already canon?
Because everyone already just accepts him.
Despite the fact that the new Spider-Man movies are when it's like a kid? It's a younger Spider-Man.
Yep.
But it's
just a different Spider-Verse. Just a different Spider-Verse.
Well, yeah, I mean, we knew that, but I didn't think that the Garfield Spider-Man would be canon in the Marvel timeline until they explained the multiverse for Spider-Man.
No, I mean, that was this movie.
Isn't that the beauty of the multiverse?
So how was it canon before Spider-Verse is my question.
Because ever since that one day he went to that one convention dressed as Spider-Man and then revealed that he was who he was, all wrongdoings by him were forgiven by the spider community. I speak on behalf of the spider community. Please, no one from the spider community, correct me. I am your messiah.
I feel like you're not answering my question, but that's okay. It doesn't really need
to be
answered.
I do feel like I'm getting more confused. Multiverse
politics.
Theory, baby. You just have to work it same way Fire Emblem does. It's like... things are a little wibbly wobbly with, you know, crisscrossed and time and yep. So anyway, here's your daughter. You can romance her. Good old Fire Emblem. Or it can even be in that Dark Souls vein where it's just like, yeah, time. What is time? It's a concept, sure, but we're not going to bother with it. Like, multiverse theory is the ultimate cop out for having any sort of continuity, which I think is a great move.
I feel like you're kind of not giving From Software credit, though, for...
I think they've done a really good job with it, but I'm saying if you want more From Software games, if you want more Spider-Man stuff, the easiest way to get that is to make sure that the things that happened before are at least inconsequential enough to not impact telling the same story again.
Are you telling me that you don't think that the stories from Dark Souls 1, 2, and 3 lead together in like a way that a timeline could be believable?
I have a really hard time reconciling 2 with 1 and 3, but I would say 1 and 3 have actually very effective timelines. And From Software probably, I mean, they're approaching it in a very different way where I guess rise and fall of Lordran or whatever the name for the realm is at that time is like similar but different, essentially like this like never ending cycle or circle of Dark Souls life. I think that works really well, and that they mainly use the whole like things are all crisscrossed and weird around here to more give them an ability to have every player go through the same experience, or for you to have essentially multiple players play through the same game experience or share multiplayer, that it's like all of these universes or like outcomes are happening at the same exact time and they're crossing over, and that's how you can end up summoning your friend to fight with you, but they have their own quote unquote Dark Souls storyline that they're playing out in the single player mode. Maybe that, just, that makes more sense.
You just convinced me to want to play Dark Souls.
Dude, Dark Souls is so good.
I'm never going to play it, but I'm proud of you. That was good.
Thank you. Honestly, I have to give all the credit to From Software. And
apparently I'm freezing himself. Today.
Oh, yeah, you are a little frozen.
You could also give a lot of credit to ENB and, what is his name? Plague of Gripes. They both do a great job explaining the story to everyone that doesn't get it.
Oh, yeah. I haven't experienced any of Plague of Gripes' stuff regarding the Dark Souls universe, but I could see how that would be a good resource for figuring it out. I like his style.
He does other things too, like he does Dragon Ball tier videos, I think.
Yeah, actually he did that, and it helped me a lot. Like the breakdowns are my favorite kind of breakdown, which is angry guy gets angry at thing that really no one needs to get angry about, and it holds my attention.
Nice.
Yeah. So I have seen Cookie online quite a bit playing Super Smash Bros. And I need to get it out here now before I forget to communicate to you. If you ever see me online for Smash Bros., you best believe I'll set up a lobby in an instant to play. I've been enjoying playing online so much, especially the patch that just went through has really seemed to help with connectivity or like stability issues.
I can dig it. Yeah, I will definitely send you a message.
Sweet. Have you done anything else with your free time, or has it been 100% committed to your new love of Smash Bros. Ultimate?
We got another dog in the house for the weekend.
Okay, that's like you made that much less surprising every step of that sentence.
Yeah. Did that on purpose, but we've got Cora for the weekend, and she's just been a delight, kind of, more or less. Hadn't been bad. But besides that, just Smash, Spider-Man, and I will say, if you guys have not seen this Spider-Man, it's excellent. Just the art style and everything about it's just wonderful. It's a great take on Miles Morales' life.
Miles Morales is... I don't know much about him besides the fact that he is a younger Spider-Man. Generally, he is a Spider-Man of color and wears a black spider suit, and he might have different spider powers. I'm not sure about that.
So at least in this version, Miles Morales does have different powers, so he does not have the web-swinging ability, but he has a camouflage and an electrocution.
Oh, shit. That makes total sense. All those zapping spiders that I learned about back in college biology.
Yeah, so he's one of those spider people, I guess, because this movie incorporates Spider-Gwen.
Okay.
Spider-Gwen, Spider-Ham, Spider-Man Noir, and two versions of just normal Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I wonder which Spider-Man is the villain.
Kingpin?
Oh, Kingpin's the villain. That's too bad. I was really kind of hoping that there would also be a villainous Spider-Man.
Like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man?
Or Man-Spider.
Nope, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man's the one that comes over to Miles Morales' universe.
Not the Andrew
wait,
Garfield?
Wait, that's the Tobey...
Wait, no, wait. Which one's the emo Spider-Man?
That's Spider-Man from Maguire. The Amazing... Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tobey Maguire's the one who comes over. It seems more like Andrew Garfunkel's the one that is in Miles' universe.
Okay.
Oh, they share the universe then?
That one and Miles?
Well, they both exist in... Yeah, they're both like different people. Like every other Spider-Man, with the exception to like Spider-Ham, Spider-Gwen, yada yada, are Peter Parker's, or what's his clone's name again? That's the Crimson Spider.
Oh God,
Yeah,
I should know this.
Doesn't even matter. They don't even feature, like, it that character is not important enough to be, you know, shown in the advertising just to show you how unimportant this character is at this point.
I want to say he's got the, oh, you mean the Scarlet Spider, right?
Scarlet Spider, yeah.
I want to say his outfit might be in the movie. I mean, in the movie. Because
like as a cameo?
They go to Spider-Man in this universe's like secret lair, and it's very much full of different spider suits that are available, and one's got a cape, weirdly enough. But either way, it's a great movie. Good soundtrack. Got a beautiful fucking art style, like so much so that I'm like, oh, I think I'm gonna actually buy this when it comes out on DVD to physically own a copy.
Do you think they'd release a version that was 30 frames per second?
Probably. I don't know what this version was.
So it's definitely not running at 30 frames. I think it's part of the style because like traditional cartoon animation usually isn't running at an extremely high frame rate. But if I'm not mistaken, when I was watching the trailers, everything looked like cel-shaded, three-dimensional.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, no, I actually doubt they'll like redo the programming behind the
render. Right, I was making a joke about it because like I'm not saying it looks bad because it definitely doesn't look bad. I think like once I would watch like 10 minutes of it, it wouldn't feel so jarring. But and like going through the trailers and stuff, it felt kind of weird seeing like that cel-shaded, high-quality, three-dimensional graphics, especially when I'm playing games at 60 frames and up. And then I watch this trailer, and it looks, you know, at like it's more of a frame rate that you would see in a cartoon.
No, that makes sense.
I was really curious behind that decision, and I know it's to emulate, like, traditional cartoon animation, but I don't know. I guess you guys weren't really thrown off by it, but I assume that would be, a topic for most people.
I see it now that you bring it up, just looking at the trailer.
And I guess I will say that the first, 2 minutes of the film were kind of odd because it is a very stylized animation style, but it does have a, you're reading a comic book panel feel to it, even though everything is animated.
Yeah, it's got that herky-jerky flipbook kind of style to the animation. Like, you know, a flip book it's relatively smooth, but it's not the it's not the same as your 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
And it's got that I don't know, it seems to add like a bit of an impact to his movements on even the small scenes when they're like having very minute gestures for the characters. It almost accents that by each movement being a little, I guess...
Single frame?
Yeah, since it's single frame, there's a little bit more of a jump in any of the movement that occurs. And so I think, if anything, it like draws more attention to it. I like it as a stylistic choice.
I like it. But yeah, this was an excellent movie and definitely worth a watch if you're a fan of Spider-Man in general. Gives you a nice different take on things. Hip-hoppy take, I guess.
I imagine it's got a lot of cool Easter eggs for the comic book fans.
So for reference, I was just reading up a few topics. Apparently, cartoons were pretty commonly done in 12 and 15 frames per second. And South Park is, at least on a more recent basis, 15 frames a second, to give you a reference point in something modern.
Nice. Didn't know that.
But obviously, like, feature films, like from Disney or DreamWorks, are going to be most likely 24 frames per second. Not to say, like, the actual frames and what we see, like, the playback doesn't change. Like, if we're watching it on an American TV, it's likely 29.97, or, you know, the double on that if it's, like, a DVD, quote-unquote, high quality. But likely, it's not actually changing the image every single frame. But yeah, that aside, let me not go too far into nerddom there. Cookie, have you been doing anything else?
That's been my life for this week. What you been up to, Scott?
Took my dog to the dog park yesterday. That was pretty exciting seeing, I guess it was big dog day there because he was probably one of the like two or three small dogs there the whole time. And our our dog is already a very nervous boy. And so watching him like skitter across the ice and try and lift one of his feet while he was running because it was too cold on his paws was a real delight. I haven't gone to a dog park in the middle of winter before and enjoyed that quite a bit. Man, what else have I been up to? I've been hanging out for Sierra's birthday. It's her birthday weekend. So took her bowling. We've had some good food to eat recently in the past couple days. She's not nearly as bougie as I am with my taste. So instead of going out to like one high ticket restaurant, I've been treating her to her favorites around town, which include like just a falafel place and some like garbage Chinese and all that good stuff. Let's see, finished the second season of Marvelous Miss Maisel. I don't know if either of you guys have watched that show.
No, it's on my list though.
It's pretty good. I enjoy it quite a bit. This second season is one of the first times I've watched a show and within the first episode been like, oh, maybe I don't want to continue with it. But it has like a weird, rocky first episode and a half, and then it starts to get really fun as they move to essentially a new like setting for, I think, a good 4 or 5 episodes in the run, and they get the kind of the narrative rolling again. But that's been very enjoyable for anybody who's been keeping up on that. I won't spoil anything if you do go to watch it, but it's been a delight seeing. I really love like second seasons and third seasons of shows when characters get developed a little bit more. Because there's sort of that continuation in a lot of television shows where the pilot will establish very like basic, easy to identify characteristics for each character. And within a season, they'll flesh out kind of strictly along those lines. So those characters still fit like relatively rigid within the tropes that apply to them. And then season 2 and 3 for good shows, normally they really start to round out characters a lot more as both the actors in, you know, like live action stuff and the writers themselves like get more comfort with expanding, I guess, the broadness or depicting the multitudes contained within every character, just like every person. And so it's been very entertaining watching that. And you can see some of the more popular, or I guess, what should I say? The more established actors like Tony Shalhoub just crush it in the second season. Like they're just given a lot more, I think, screen time and then leeway to do their thing. And they're very, very fun in that capacity.
Nice.
Yeah. As far as other stuff to do, I'm getting my board waxed to hit the mountain so I can start snowboarding this season.
You wax snowboards?
Yeah. You still have to wax your snowboard. I didn't know that. It's important to wax your snowboard every once in a while. I don't go out very often in the season, so I probably wax like once or twice in the year. And then before I go back out to the mountain, I get it taken care of. Like my edges, for instance, because this board that I bought is kind of an intentional beater. The edges are a little rusty and like need some tuning. So I just turned them into the shop to get a quick work over before I get back out there. But you want to wax your board just like waxing your skis. Otherwise you lose some of that speed, some of that glide over time as the wax wears off.
I did not know this. See, and now I'm learning.
Good. I'm glad to provide the necessary snowboard care tips from a guy who just admittedly said he had rusty edges on his board. So I am only explaining the bare minimum of snowboard care. You probably shouldn't leave it open-faced in a garage over the whole spring to fall season, but you know, what else am I going to do with it? Store it? Buy a bag? No. I'll just pay to have those edges taken care of at the beginning of the next season. But that's about it. I got a Secret Santa gift exchange coming up. We're going to celebrate Sierra's birthday with some cake.
Cake.
Cake. And That's about it on the lineup, because otherwise I've also been occupying a ton of my time with some Smash Brothers Ultimate.
You mentioned a recent patch. Why don't we talk about Smash?
Okay, fantastic. So anybody who has just bought the game or bought the game on release has probably already seen that there is a version 1.2.0 patch that has a couple of tweaks. It gets rid of some like glitches that were happening. For instance, I think all of the Link characters were experiencing invisible bomb glitches at different points in time, which I unfortunately was not lucky enough to receive, because that seems like a great edge for the game. And a couple other like weird buggy things going on with other characters that didn't necessarily impact combat very much, but made it a little hard to either see or like execute something. The biggest change I think to note, though, is that they're kind of toning down the challenger approach CPU difficulty, which I really unfortunately did not wait until the patch occurred to unlock every character in Smash. So I played them all at their hardest difficulty and probably rematched Dark Samus 5 times that I can think of before I was finally able to unlock her or it. I don't exactly know how to gender a irradiated Phazon being, but we're going to go with her.
She does have boobs.
I got the shit kicked out of me over and over by Dark Samus every single time the challenger approach would happen. And what I did not know is that was actually the last Smash character I needed to unlock as well. So
nice. Did you get anything special for unlocking the last one?
I don't know. I actually probably should navigate around the menus a little bit more than just going to the high attention areas, like your standard local Smash play or classic mode or the spirit board or the adventure, because I honestly haven't looked at much else. I tried to mix a playlist of music on there. It was not super into, like, it's a little weird that in order to create a playlist, you have to go into the songs instead of going to the playlist option and select create a new playlist. Instead, you go into the songs and then you can attribute them to a playlist. And if you want to create a new playlist, you select your first song and then you select create a new playlist, and that song gets immediately nested under that label. Yeah, it's not super intuitive or user-friendly, but it's easy enough once you figure that out. But yeah, I haven't checked to see. There's an all-star mode, which I didn't realize. It's under the Mob Smash tab. The amount of time I've put into this game and the lack of knowledge I have about navigating the menus is pretty is a pretty weird split. I just know that the bane of my existence right now is that my highest score in classic mode is on fucking Diddy Kong, and it makes me so frustrated because I hate that champion.
Yours is Diddy Kong? Mine's Pikachu, weirdly enough.
I know. I have never, like, that was probably the second or third time I had ever played Diddy Kong as a character, and I was like, wow, he is just as broken as I thought he was. And before that, the high score was attributed to Ganon, which made plenty of sense. I was like, oh, yes, this makes complete sense. Ganon's impossible to knock off the stage, and I do just like megatons of damage to almost any character. So when it came to the like Master Hand, Crazy Hand fight at the end, I had pretty much murdered Crazy Hand before Master Hand had touched me. And I was just like, yep, this feels about right playing Ganon. Who has had some awesome fixes to his kit. Like, he's got amazing reach now on his smashes since they gave him his sword, essentially, as his all of his smashes, his down, his up, and his over smashes all utilize his sword in some way and give him much better reach for all of his attacks. And I think they may have shortened the lag time on his up A, where he, like, holds his heel in the air and it sizzles, and then it comes down and explodes against the ground. Never hits anybody because it's so slow.
Yeah, I know that life. I see your girl Isabel might have gotten a nerf.
Oh no, that's not good.
It doesn't say exactly what it is, but I do know that the world was calling for a nerf on Isabel because she's such a weird fucking character.
The only patch I see is that her invulnerability frames were added to the end of her final smash if it connects, which, if anything, is a buff.
That is a buff. Sweet, you're able to find something. Cool.
Yeah. I do know that Isabel is like very disorienting for some old Smash players because that fishing rod is so, so good.
That fishing rod, it's like, oh, sweet, I'm going to cancel out the fishing rod. Well, someone jumped into the fishing rod as it was canceling out, so I guess I'm going to throw them now.
Exactly, yeah. I honestly catch more people not on the cast, but on the, like, the reset of the line. Yeah. I reel it in and I catch them. And it's so, so great for, like, tossing someone into hazards or other issues. Like, I've used it in the adventure mode to great effect, tossing characters into, like, spikes or lava pits to just immediately KO them at 100%. And also... Oh, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, speaking of adventure mode, one of my favorite things is when you get that really hard ace character... Mm-hmm. And they're like, their metal assist trophies are going to be showing up, and they jump off the thing and just kill themselves because they're so heavy. And I'm just like, oh, thank God I don't have to deal with this fight.
Yeah, that's got to be nice. I haven't gotten that yet, but that sounds excellent.
4 times so far for me.
I have, I think I've found the most delight in the adventure mode tweaking some of the rules. As you get further into the game, you obviously get more of those spirit orbs or whatever to level up. And the end of some of those branches are really awesome. Like, one of them gives you 2 final smashes once you earn it. And so I've used like a single final smash to bait an enemy into a position they can't escape from a second final smash with, which has been nice. Awesome. There's also another option to the upper right hand of the skill tree that gives you another midair jump. So you get 2 midair jumps on top of 1 jump off the ground. And it makes evasion from like a lot of ground game stuff excellent. But it also means you can juggle even longer and with like even more accuracy. So I enjoy this little skill tree adjustment. And I don't know if... I was trying to decide if these would also be fun if you added them to the like special rules smash, but I'm not sure. Maybe because you're a player character that's already in like a difficult situation against these computer characters, it makes sense to have these kind of weird buffs that in some ways can be very powerful in the fight. But it would be entertaining to be able to have those options also in the special smash to switch on and off. They'd also make great handicaps for players who are playing against like higher level people in their family or friend group.
No, that makes sense. So I haven't quite figured out how to morph any of my spirits. How?
You have to get them to level 99, and then you go to manage spirits, and then there's one that's like level up, and you use that screen primarily for giving them like candies or snacks or whatever to empower them. But if they're at 99, you can select them. There's an option that says can be improved, and then you improve them and they transform into a better version of the spirit. So like I got a Bullet Bill and turned him into a Bonsai Bill, and I got some anime looking gal and turned her into an even more anime looking gal. There's a Mega Man one that I'm trying to finish that will probably turn into another Mega Man. They'll just turn into a more Mega Man, Giga Man. You get like young Revolver Ocelot, for instance, and if you transform him, you get Revolver Ocelot from Metal Gear Solid 5. So it just improves their base stats, and I can't remember if it actually gives them a special... attribute in that bottom section, because you know there's the special attributes for other characters like weight up or weight down or dash attack. They obviously can't occupy that space when they can be improved to 99, but I don't know if I've actually had any. Oh, actually I do. Revolver Ocelot is a good example when you get him to MGS5 Revolver Ocelot, your shooting attack goes up as his bonus. And it's a really good one. Like, you pair that with Bayonetta or Samus or whoever else has a projectile or a shooting attack, and it does some good damage.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you for that tip.
You're welcome. Remember, wax your snowboard and your controller for less friction.
And that's Scott's Tip Corner.
Have there been any new fighters that have really caught your eye, or that you've found yourself kind of falling in love with?
Oh, I main Incineroar now.
Man, he is a blast. That's actually exactly who I was thinking of. Like, I've had a lot of fun with Ridley, and my friend that I've played the most like competitive one-on-one smashes with. I think I nearly two-stocked him with Ridley, because Ridley is also a very fun kit. But Incineroar just is an absolute delight and a heavy hitter. I still haven't mastered the Lariat contact yet.
Oh, God, I love the Lariat contact. It's like, do I want to send him flying completely backwards or up in the air to hit him with an up smash? I mean, hit him with an up B.
How do you do that? What are the mechanics exactly to the Lariat? I know you grab them with the over B and they get thrown into a ring that pops up. Yeah, a turnbuckle. And then you hit them with the good old Lariat. But the execution, if it's way too late, you both make contact and take 4%. But yep. I don't know the mechanics past that. If you do it early, what happens versus if you do it late?
If you do it early, I've been finding myself doing it early a lot more, and that'll send them flying backwards. If you do it perfectly, it'll send them up.
Okay. Interesting.
And now that I say this out loud, I've got to Google it.
Just to double check. Neil, I know your voice isn't doing great, and every time you open your mouth, more viruses fly in and try and take you down. Have you played much Smash at all?
I don't own Smash.
Oh.
Yeah, I said this last week. That. I probably won't buy it.
It's a real shame, but it's understandable.
I think the only time I would play it is if I was at someone's house.
Well, you can always come over and play at my place if you want to.
Okay, I'll come down there tomorrow. Go up there tomorrow?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're going to take the southern strategy, huh? Where you circumnavigate the globe to get further north.
So, quick side banter, but would it be acceptable to say go down there if Montana happened to be in a lower elevation than Nebraska? I don't think it is, but just curious.
I don't know. I think some people get really picky about use it like over there versus up there versus down there. I pretty much say whichever direction comes to mind first.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. It's just like, oh yeah, just come on down. But knowing that you are in Georgia and that person's in Washington.
Maybe if you lived South Pole, you wouldn't have to worry at all.
I mean, it's all perspective.
I think whenever I'm saying come on down, I'm inviting someone to my house. And then if I'm going up somewhere, I'm going somewhere else. Is always the way I do it, actually, now that I think about it.
I would agree that that's probably a similar format to what I do 9 times out of 10.
And it makes sense if you hang out in your basement more often. Because come on down,
if you live in my basement.
Here's some lotion.
Is this a Silence of the Lambs reference?
No, because it's extremely dry in my basement because there's a heater on and air is, arid.
Well, that's good at least. I mean, the alternative is like black mold. And then it would explain why you're dying. Cookie, have you found what you're looking for yet?
I have, but it only gives me percentages and doesn't actually
give you directions.
Say, there it is. That was what I was looking for. All right, so the body backdrop, which is the one that he goes flying, is with low, and the perfect timing is up. So yeah, so I said that.
Okay, okay. Have you tried out the training mode at all? That's probably another thing that I was going to ask about is, have you tried the training mode, and how do you feel about the training mode having these different terrain changes in the middle of it, and just having the units and projected arcs all able to be tabulated within an instant on the screen?
I love it and hate it at the same time. I do like the fact that the main thing that you're on does give you the out of bounds of saying, okay, if you hit this person with this at this percentage, they would be out in Final Destination, or they would be out in, I forget what the other level is.
I think it's Big Battlefield, but I'm not sure.
That could be it. I also like the fact that, yes, you can just throw an enemy over into that other terrain. I wish you had an ability to, at least I haven't found one yet, actually say, hey, spawn in this terrain. You can reset them back to 0.00, which
but
is going to be
back
that
on
big
the flat terrain.
And then one of the terrains is literally the one to the very left is just a wall, just a low wall. So that way you can kind of figure out wall bounces and things. The other one's the three ledge with the platform.
The Battlefield format, as I'm familiar with.
As the other one's just like a flat plane that just goes off to the distance of forever. I do like the fact that it does tell you, hey, this is this trajectory and this is what you kind of can kind of expect. So I was doing a lot of, I was using the me character that I created that uses the punches. So now I know like, okay, if I want them at this angle, I'll do this thing. Or if I want them at this angle going in this direction, I'll do their body backdrop, etc.
Right. Instead of what I do, which is not as good, just reactionary. Like I hit them and I'm like, okay, where are they going? Gonna chase them down.
So it's nice that they have it, especially for someone who does like to go into the fighting games, more fighting game, like extensive combos. And I'm really bad at like pulling these extensive combos off, but I'm good enough to know like, oh, this person's doing this with this move. Mm-hmm. Like when I watch my Dragon Ball Z Fighters or Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter or etc. And now for this one, I can kind of understand the mechanics a little bit more now with these trajectories that get, okay, this person's doing this. I can now see that this is a combo versus this is not a combo. Cool. I'll never actually utilize any of this in Smash because I'm not that good.
I don't know. But we can always start that team once Neil finally buckles and gets Smash because Joker's the first DLC.
That I'm excited for.
I think it's going to get him. I'm pretty sure I advocated the exact opposite last time we talked about it, in which I said no DLC character is going to make anyone buy a game, but they may make someone buy the DLC for it. But now I'm completely reversing my opinion and saying that that's going to get Neil. It's going to eat away at him. It may not be day of release, but within a couple months, he's going to feel that need to
don't
play,
ever see
his,
it coming.
Play his Joker. Yeah, he really won't.
I will say after your avocation for you going out and buying a Pro Controller.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking and I was like, huh, yeah, I can buy a Pro Controller. And then I was looking at them and I was like, oh, that's just so expensive and they're not on sale anymore.
It's the price of a game. I mean,
yeah. So I saved $10 and I got the wireless GameCube controller.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that works.
And do you like it?
Yeah, mixing's, I don't know. I have actually never used it. When I play Smash at work, it's quite literally, if I'm playing
handheld,
Smash with someone else, I'll just throw it into the tabletop mode and I'll just use the Joy-Con controllers because I'm used to those. Mm-hmm. And since the other person's probably not used to using the Joy-Con controllers, so like, here's the GameCube controller. That's what you're probably more used to playing on anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with this.
So have you guys seen the weird, all the pictures online of people playing Smash in like weird situations? Like a kid playing it during a lecture. He's got Smash in his backpack partway open.
I mean, that's any college kid at any college lecture.
But have you seen the
something
one
sneaky?
Have you seen the one though where two kids are playing Smash in bathroom stalls and the Smash screen is just in between the two stalls underneath the wall?
No, I have not seen that.
That seems like a really inconvenient way to play. I would also not do that. No.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yep.
Well, that killed the Smash conversation, apparently.
Yeah, it's so gross, man. It's on the bathroom floor.
I mean, there was something underneath it, but that doesn't make it any better.
No,
it
doesn't.
There's just so much poop in the air in a bathroom.
Yeah, it's literally just circulating. And I mean, the lower to the ground you get, the better chance that, I don't know, man. I understand. I get the temptation to bring your Switch into the bathroom with you, because you know what? At the end of the day, everybody brings their phone into the bathroom with them. And how many people then break out their alcohol wipes and wipe down their phone afterward to make sure that it's completely sanitary and clean?
No one. But,
just me.
But I will say, I'll just stick with my phone in the bathroom, and I'll just play Smash outside the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I'm in my own house, and then I don't really care. Different bathrooms, different scenarios.
Man, I don't have any other games I was going to play. The question I was going to ask is, I saw on the Nintendo eShop that there is a game called, I assume it's Gree, because
Gris? Gers? Yeah. Girls?
So Gree is gray in French, and that's how you spell it. And so it also looks very artsy-fartsy, sort of Belladonna of sadness style. And it seems neat, and it's got a very beautiful, like, artistic approach. But if I remember correctly, it's like $16 or $17. And I realized that one of the things that prevents me from buying some indie games is the impression that I don't really know what it's about, or if there's a huge amount of gameplay, and I don't know if I'm willing to pay. I don't know. I'm trying to reconcile the, like, monetary value of it to play a game that is mostly just beautiful or artistic and pretty, because there are plenty of games that I've played that have had excellent gameplay and also been, you know, very beautiful, or I think, like, had a strong artistic cohesion. One game I like to think of is Hyper Light Drifter. Has an amazing soundtrack and a really beautiful world, but its gameplay is also very entertaining and fun. And that's a game that I'm pretty sure I paid less than... I probably paid around $10 for that when it was on sale at some point in time.
Well, I can make you feel better. It is right now on sale for 15% off, so it's only $14.44.
All right. Under that, which $15 mark, it might do me.
Which is honestly doing a lot better than the Knights of Pen and Paper, which is an iOS game that you play Dungeons and Dragons with. But, like, you're the actual... characters playing Dungeons. It's a weird iOS game that I really love that always goes on trips with me. They've got that on the Switch for Knights of Pen and Paper, and Knights of Pen and Paper 2 for $22.49 or $12.99 each. So, being a fan of more classical games, what's your thoughts on the Phantasy Star being on, not online, excuse me, Phantasy Star being on the Switch?
Which games are on the Switch now?
From my knowledge, just Phantasy Star.
The original? Okay.
The original.
It's like, I guess it's cool from a preservation standpoint. I don't know any of the details, though, if they've made any changes. I'm assuming it's the original game played on, like, an emulation sort of style situation.
Seems to be called Sega Ages Phantasy Star.
Yeah, in which case it's probably a port of an older re-release they've done for it. It's whatever. I think Phantasy Star itself is a lot cooler as an idea of what it used to be. And in today's modern age, it's probably harder to play. Like, it's kind of like going back and playing Final Fantasy 1, which I don't know how well I would go over, since I haven't played that since I was probably 12.
The Game Boy Advance remake of Final Fantasy 1 is actually really good.
Though keyword remake as opposed to re-release, right? Or port?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's, you know, it is a remake, not even a remaster at that point, right? Because they completely, I think, just rebuilt it.
Let me take back everything I've said. If this selling really well means that we're going to get Phantasy Star online too, then it's amazing. Everyone should go buy it. Get us PSO2 in America officially, finally, please.
I can dig it. But continuing our topic on, like, weird indie-ish type games, I guess, even though Phantasy Star is not one of those, I've been looking at a game called Light Fingers or Sticky Fingers for the Switch. I think I'm going to have to pull the trigger. It is a board game like title for the Switch where you are a band of thieves and you're competing against each other to steal as much as you can and get the loot back to your headquarters. And each round goes as one person goes, they get to unlock more of the map, and they can either buy things from the store with the loot they have, or they can choose to rob said store and then never be able to return to that store again. And as you're robbing more and more stores, the fuzz starts coming after you. It's all very stylized and looks beautiful. I think I am going to have to pull the trigger on that. That was all I had on that game. Besides, I got my PAX tickets. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of this.
Hell yeah.
I like the face that you made while you did that.
It's the only one I know how to do for that. that is a 100% Sierra imitation.
Perfect. But yeah, sorry. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of Light Fingers.
No.
It looks like an interesting game on the Switch.
I see on our docket we have something that says Sticky Fingers.
Oh, I typed that because that's what he had first said.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It is Light Fingers, though.
Light Fingers on the Switch.
This is a fun art style, too. I like that.
It's got very clockworky feel, a steampunk feel to it.
Yeah.
As more parts of the board are revealed, it shows all the inner mechanics of the worlds as it lifts up the panel and then takes the panel away. Yeah, looks like a lot of fun. And this may be the next purchase.
And so it looks like you can play with your... Are you always playing with your group concurrently, or are there times where you take turns at all in this? Do you know?
It is a turn-based game.
Okay, because it also looks like there are a couple segments or sequences where you see multiple people running through all together in a dungeon or something.
So yes, there is. You can choose to explore dungeons as well.
Okay.
And then the other characters are doing traps, from what I understand. I don't know. Either way, it seems fun.
Yeah. That's really cool. And has this is released already? Yes, it has. Mm-hmm. September 20th.
Yep, it's been available for a while.
And it's developed by Canadians, something I always support. Well, I haven't touched anything else, Neil, so this is your time to fill.
What little bit of games I did play that are worth bringing up. Pro Office Calculator. Is it a game? Is it a giant waste of time? I don't know, but I heard through the grapevines that this was something worth investigating, so I decided to jump into it. And after spending a ridiculous amount of time trying to figure out the first quote-unquote phase of this seemingly terrible calculator app, it occurred to me that each time you opened and... Well, yeah, I don't think this is... It's a problem spoiling it. But basically, this game is not what it seems. Or I should say, this app is not what it seems. You'll see it under Games on Steam. While it opens up as an office calculator, you have to do things to the calculator or the application in order to unlock new features within it. And... I only bring it up because I do like these weird meta experiences that make you think, or at least it tries to be something that's not before revealing itself to be what it actually is. So that part about it is cool. But as you go through these weird processes of essentially quote unquote hacking into the calculator, you start to reinstall it. And it turns out basically what you're actually playing is a strange Doom style first-person shooter with phases of Minesweeper as well, which is what made it relevant to me, I guess.
I was going to say, this completely ties in with our last episode, which is more than I could have asked for.
If it weren't for the Doom portions, I think I would have enjoyed my time with this game a lot more.
Oh, the Doom was the off-putting portion of it?
Yeah, absolutely, actually. Just because it's okay, there were a few issues I had with it, and because it opens up as a calculator app, And I couldn't figure out a way to circumvent this, but basically it was like, you know, the size of your typical Windows calculator. And so when that also has to be the screen for your first person shooter, that is a little bit too small, and I wasn't really willing to dig around with my screen resolution to make it any better. A few other things that came to mind that just I didn't think were great, but there were a lot of cool things, like when you were installing functions that seemingly, like, at some point, basically, the calculator gets uninstalled, and you have to reinstall the calculator, and you get to choose the optional functions. One of the first functions which is required is the equal sign. And while you're just like, well, what the fuck is the point of me installing these different functions? It's because you need a certain number of functions, like the number 1 or 0 or 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, plus, minus, decimal, etc. You need a number of those features in place in order to solve the puzzle once the actual calculator is reinstalled. Part of the reinstallation process involves going around shooting people, and the more features, quote-unquote, you install for your calculator, the harder the Doom sequences get to be.
Mm.
And when I say Doom, I mean like original Doom, not Doom 2016.
Not 2016.
Oh, man.
If you use that minus sign, though, like what you're able to do is subtract limbs from your enemy's bodies, right? With the Doom melee approach.
If only...
So, can I get a small amount of clarification on this calculator screen? It is, we're talking just the like widescreen you find on a non-graphing calculator, or are we talking graphing calculator size?
So I'm talking like open up your, it's a quote-unquote simple calculator. Like there's no scientific, I guess, is that what they call scientific?
Yeah,
like.
Scientific calculators, yes.
Scientific calculators have a added number of functions to your standard calculator, as well as normally navigation options with like up, down, left, right arrows, and the ability to perform like certain like trigonometric functions and things like that.
So, despite the name of Pro Office Calculator, this could not be used by a professional because it's lacking most of your features except for division, multiplication, addition, and subtraction.
It's the numpad version. It's the numpad version of your like keyboard.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
So it might be easier to to show you some screenshots if you guys are really curious. But you could also download it. It's only like. Maybe 100 megs, if that.
It's mainly for the value of our listeners who can't necessarily see it.
Yeah, so again, to specify, the screen is not much larger than if you just opened up your Windows calculator app.
Okay.
So that is what you're going to be seeing. It's technically more of a landscape window as opposed to like the portrait that you see on a Windows 10 calculator.
Mm-hmm. Except apparently mine's huge because I just opened it to check and it's the whole screen.
Yours is the whole screen?
I mean, I think it's not the whole screen, but I'd say if I were to do a percentage, it would be 65% of my screen.
See, mine would be like a 16th of my screen. I guess
mine was also very, very large.
You can resize it. So the screen I got from Pro Office Calculator is way less than a quarter of your screen. Mm-hmm. So if you want to think of it as like if you're on a 1080 p monitor, it's probably 240.
So yeah, the Pro Office Calculator, Scott, is much smaller. It's what Neil describes it as.
It's interesting, but like I don't know, it adheres to the same sort of like interest I had for games, or have, I should say, for games like Frog Fractions 1 and 2, but it doesn't have the same sort of like appeal in that. Like, I'd never really played, or I played, but I never really enjoyed the old first person shooter games, you know, Wolfenstein and Doom, all that much. So it doesn't really like hit me in the same way. It might do that for either of you two, though. And then aside from that, I also played the alpha of Love Esquire, which is the follow-up game from the company that made The Letter, which was like an indie sort of horror survival, or not survival, horror visual novel. And at first when I heard about Love Esquire, I was kind of reluctant to even give it a shot because the concept is like very straightforward, in your face. It's a dating sim with the hook that instead of being the hero of the story, you are the squire to a douchebag hero knight character. But actually playing the alpha kind of gave me some good impressions because like it really seems to drive home humor as its main focus. And you really do feel kind of like a poor asshole that gets stuck in a bad situation because it's like, hey, guess what? You have 4 months before we go off to war and squires die in war. So your character is resigned to the fact that you're going to die, but you have 4 months to potentially romance or find love. And these might not be inclusive or exclusive, who knows? Or maybe better yourself as a squire so you don't suck ass at your job. Aside from the core mechanic of the game being that of like quote unquote old school dating sim where you like raise your own stats, charisma, strength, and intelligence, you also get to go on adventures with your knight whose name is Hugh. And your job as a squire is basically taunting enemies so your knight doesn't get killed, looting dead bodies, and encouraging your knight friend to do special attacks. So I quite enjoyed the writing thus far, but I'm assuming that's still a ways off in development.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot more fun than me dicking around with this stupid calculator that's clearly just a calculator and nothing else.
Cookie is now playing Pro Office Calculator, which does have some pretty wonderful reviews on Steam. It looks like a lot of people
seem to
really appreciate it.
But I wish they would give me a hint as to the first thing I need to do, because as of right now, it is just a calculator.
Okay,
well,
so the
I'm
very
sure
first
it's
thing.
Waiting for you to type in 80085 or 8008135.
I think you have to start off with 513.
Oh yeah, you work backwards. Hey man, I shows how often I did that.
What are some of these
reviews
like?
I mean, one of them said 10 out of 10 would repeatedly.
Why are you guys making me type
in
boobies upside down?
I was really hoping it'd be a bunch of like joke comments, like this is the best calculator I've ever used. My office production has only, office efficiency has tripled since implementing Pro Office Calculator.
Nope, everyone tells you it's a puzzle, but no one tells you like how to make an actual puzzle out of this calculator.
So
is it like a timing thing?
Kind of. I feel like the first puzzle is the dumbest. If you go and click on the help drop down and you go to about or whatever it would be, it's going to say the same thing that you would expect. The title of the app, the version.
It says 7 now.
Yeah, so each time you close and reopen Pro Office Calculator, the number that's italicized at the bottom of that window keeps counting down. So you literally have to open and close the program like 10 times or something before you actually can get past the first phase.
So in reality, some people would be using this as an office calculator and then be surprised by a game.
I mean, that's the theory, but the problem is that the numbers are not mapped to the calculator.
Yeah, so you can't use the numpad, which already just like super infuriates me.
Yeah, maybe, no, that disqualifies it.
Maybe it makes sense for the first actual puzzle that happens. And to kind of spoil you, Cookie, essentially, like the first big thing that you'll have to face is suddenly all of the numbers and commands on the calculator become a bunch of random symbols from like female, male signs. I guess that's Venus and Mars. And other things.
Other
and
so, wingdings classics.
Yeah, basically. And so you have to figure out through a process of like experimentation with each of the buttons, figure out what all of the buttons do in order to come up with, and then you'll have like a solution in front of you and it's a specific number, but you can't really put in the number until you figure out what your symbols actually mean. So,
well, that'd be excellent. Now I've just got an infinity sign. Hey, it glitched out kind of for a second there. Sweet. That's good. That's good. It did a little glitchy thing.
There might be one more puzzle now. Okay. So again, this is something that like is a little hard to obtain or a little hard to decipher. What you're supposed to do now is confuse the calculator or get the calculator to glitch out even more, which, you know, what was the easiest way to make a calculator error when you were a kid?
That's what I've been working on, but it's got a lot of places to, oh God, just so many.
Why don't you divide whatever number you have right now by zero?
That makes a lot more sense. Yay, thank you. Okay. Ooh, Apex systems now.
And now you're playing the game. I think that's like the actual point at which you're playing the real game.
Yep, thank you. That's literally all I needed was to figure that out. Thanks for getting me past the stupid part.
You are welcome. It really is like the dumb part. The rest of it seems much easier to figure out.
That's tabulation. That's tab. Tabulation. That's an equal sign. No, that is not an equal sign. I'll figure it out. Or I'll never play again. Yeah, I'll never play again. And that was Cookie playing Office Pro Calculator.
And that was the games I played for the week. Do we have anything we want to talk about that's newsworthy? I have not been keeping up with the times. I've mostly just been in bed sleeping.
I've got one piece of news that I think is kind of newsworthy in regards to everything that's been happening around the world recently. Apparently, there has been the first United Kingdom's Gamers Union. Excuse me, people that work on video developers union, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any thoughts about it as of right now, besides that's a good thing in light of, you know, all the recent closures and everything going on.
Yeah, but I've been trained since childhood that unions are bad. I don't know why, but I'm told this.
It's your being white and bald and blue collar sensibilities.
Isn't this collar's also red, baby?
Isn't that also like that? That's strange because I thought Montana, is that not where you were originally from, Scott?
Yes, I was actually born in the city that I now reside.
So
basically, he was management. His family came from management, so unions are bad for management. They're good for the average working man, though.
For the proletariat.
Jokes aside, though, but isn't Montana a pretty pro-union state?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I know Nebraska doesn't really seem like it, though.
Nebraska, man, every time I see state statistics, I'm more and more disappointed with Nebraska as a whole.
Aren't we all?
I mean, out of the panhandle states, maybe it's okay. But that's just competing with Oklahoma and Florida, I believe.
You wouldn't call Texas's weird shape a pan?
I don't know what the fuck Texas is. It sort of looks more like an arrowhead, if you ask me, like a really bad arrowhead. But if you got shot by that arrow, it would still do some damage.
Maybe Texas is the pan that just got dropped and now there's pancake batter everywhere.
God, Texas got dropped a few times at that point, because I'd imagine the like square parts. Why did Oklahoma get that one little strip? That's really weird.
I don't know, man. Idaho has a chimney.
Which one's Idaho?
It's
God
to the west of Montana.
Never eat soggy waffles. Go left on the map. Go left on the map.
So according to National Geographic, we have 10 panhandles.
Ooh.
What's our best panhandle state? I think we should end
Florida.
On that.
Florida, obviously. Florida, Louisiana. I'm going to go Texas. Fuck it, Nevada. That sounds like fun. Are we like talking like panhandle shaped?
No, I was talking more like state you like out of the panhandle states.
God, now I've got to go to the theological question of what is a panhandle state?
Oh, apparently National Geographic already did the ranking. Alaska's number one. Oh, that makes sense.
Florida makes it as number two. Nebraska is number three, despite the fact that the ratio between pan and handle seems pretty ridiculous there.
Hey, man, sometimes you just need a nice, thick, stout panhandle to weirdly elongated pan. But Alaska, really?
I think we have come to a conclusion for this podcast episode, though.
Doesn't sound
Alaska's
like a
really weird
natural stop to me.
Comments and questions, podcast@fancyramen.com.
Tell your friends about all the different kind of panhandles you can find you know what? Fuck it. Let's bring this to the world. Tell all your friends to find out about panhandles.
And while they're rating panhandles, they can also rate our podcast on Apple iTunes Apple Podcasts, iTunes, wherever they find them, wherever they can rate them.
Hype. I'm Neil.
I'm someone.
And I'm someone else. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Get us to the top of WikiFeet.